Hello, this is Tony Lennart. I'm just recording a voicemail for you from Rwanda. Normally I'm pretty flat out and it's very hard to take the time to correspond. At the moment though, I'm actually having a chance to just sit and really enjoy the scenery. And so I thought I'd record a message to just let you know how things are going here. When I say I'm enjoying the scenery, I really do mean it. It's shortly after 5:30. I'm sitting on top of the roof of a 5-story building and looking out over Rwanda, over the main city, Kigali. And it is one of the most beautiful scenes that you could ever see. It really is stunning watching the sun rise, the mist in the hills and clouds. Rwanda, Kigali is, well, both Kigali and Rwanda are like Switzerland. It is just one of the most beautiful places around. It's hard to believe that just where I am looking, tens of thousands of people were slaughtered. In the country, 1 million were killed, often in the most horrific ways, and thrown in pit latrines, and they had to pay money to be killed by a bullet instead of a painful way of being killed by a panga or a knife. And yet it feels so peaceful. It actually is a lovely country. 4 million people were displaced as refugees, and this is in a country of just 7 million people. It is a country urgently in need of reconciliation. Last night I had dinner with the head of the largest charity, the largest NGO here, and she was saying that she believes if some deep work on reconciliation isn't done, that it may well reoccur. I also believe that. 1 million of the population are Tutsis and 6 million are Hutus. The government, which is a wonderful government and doing some terrific things, is made up primarily of Tutsis. And when they do actually move into a democratic system, the balance of power will shift, and unless some reconciliation work has been done in a deep way that changes people, we could very well see another genocide. That's a large part of what I'm aiming to do here, and it's very possible to create some major changes. The head of this charity was saying to me that she wasn't aware of any way of actually doing reconciliation in the large enough scale that would make a difference here. And she asked how I would do it, and I told her about the process that I've designed, that I've discussed with the Reconciliation Commission, that I've test run, and which many people are actually seeing as really probably the only way to create reconciliation here, if we can get the funding for it and overcome a couple of other obstacles. It involves training 300 people at a time, training all of the top leaders in the country, from the president through to the ministers, through to local government, through to all of the religious leaders, and then spending a month training trainers to then take the program out into the countryside and into the villages. And through training a number of those people, they can then actually reach out and literally over the period of a few years do a process that will include the whole country. But let me give you a little bit of a snapshot, both of Rwanda and of, I guess, my life here. Just very briefly, in terms of Rwanda, it was the second poorest country in the world a few years ago. It's now the 8th poorest. Most of the country live in poverty. 4% have access to electricity. About 1% have phone lines. Over 80% are subsistence farmers. The average life expectancy is 43 years old. And life's pretty tough here. You walk past people in rags, with huge holes in their clothes. You walk past four-year-old kids, hand in hand, walking along with maybe their six-year-old brother, and they're orphans, and they're street kids, and if they're lucky, they can catch some grasshoppers to eat. There's a lot of work that needs to be done here, and yet there is an enormous openness to training that will change them, and that is really heartwarming. Just to give you a snapshot of life, let me go back, say, a day and a half ago. That was the evening. I was helping to supervise putting up a sign at our brand new offices. You need a sign here because there are no street numbers, and so if you don't have a sign, people can't find you. After setting up the sign, I then went and met this lady who I mentioned before, the head of the NGO, just a beautiful lady actually, and she's very keen to work with us in reconciliation, and so some good things can definitely flow from that. Came home. I'm staying in the home of Pastor Amani. He's quite an extraordinary person. He met me in my last trip here about a month ago and really became captivated by the work that we're doing. And he said that what he's really committed to is reconciliation in the country. And he said, look, I have a church. It's really a hall. It doesn't even look like a church. You can use that for training people. It'll house up to 200 people. I have an office. We can share that. And you can set up an office here. And I'll work as a volunteer. Which was just wonderful because I already had another person, also happens to be a pastor, who had previously set up and worked with an institute teaching forgiveness shortly after the genocide. He almost lost his life. A number of people that he was with were massacred, and fortunately for him, he had a very large person who died in front of him and splattered blood all over him, and so they thought he was dead. And yet he's prepared to come back here again to work with us. And so between these two beautiful people, we have an office that's costing us virtually nothing. We have two full-time people who are totally committed to our work. And so we have a wonderful future in Rwanda. We've been meeting ministries and senior people and companies and NGOs, charities. We've already done a lot of work and a lot of training. A couple of days ago we had a VIP breakfast. We had ambassadors and UN and many pastors at that, about 70 people, and that went really well. And we've just been besieged by people who are actually wanting our training and wanting to do our diploma program, and which is truly wonderful. I came home last night and found there was no electricity. I woke up and found there was no electricity for the second day running. And that was a little bit of a pain because I need electricity to charge my computer and my phone. And it's kind of nice to be able to boil the kettle and have a hot shower. There is no running water where I'm staying. I'm staying at Pastor Amani's house, or his room. It's a room just a bit over the size of two double beds, but very comfortable, and he's very kindly given it to me, and he's staying with someone else. So at the moment, sitting atop the roof of this building, I can look down over the slum area where the house is, and I can see mud brick homes, I see tin roofs, many of them have rocks or tires on them to hold them in place, and I see people moving around, and I can see the ministry that I'll be going to at 10 o'clock to meet the head of training for the gender ministry. I can see the public service ministry. I would like to meet the principal secretary who has asked for me to come back and meet him, but we're so flat out, I'm not sure if I'll be able to. So, yeah, that was the morning. Very busy day. Just as an example, at 4 o'clock, I'll give you a snapshot. I'd been at the internet cafe, printing out agendas for a reconciliation process, printing out the budget for it, printing out a letter to the Australian embassy to allow our regional manager to come back to Australia for Christmas. I'd been writing out a authorization for an NGO to act as our agent. My regional manager, we were walking out and I was needing to get to a meeting with the head of the Reconciliation Commission, and to then head off very quickly to a meeting with the head of UNESCO. But on the way, we're having a bishop who's wanting to do our training, and he's stopped and talking to our country manager, and we have the head of an NGO, and he's stopped us, and he's talking to myself and the regional manager. He's invited us to meet his chairman, who's actually writing the constitution for Rwanda. So I'll be meeting him tonight and making some suggestions about including some legislation in the constitution to work against corruption, and also particularly to give some inheritance rights to women. What often happens here is that a woman will set up a home with her husband and her children, and the husband will die, as can happen in a country where the average life expectancy is 43. And what will happen is that the brothers and sisters of the man will come in and take over and throw out the children and throw out the wife, and the farm and the livelihood that they have built up, they then have nothing to show for it. And so although there are some laws in place to protect them, they're not strong enough, and I will talk to him about maybe strengthening the constitution around that. Let's see, giving you a snapshot of the last 18 hours. That was 4 p.m. Went back to the office afterwards and was briefing our people on our diploma program. We have a brand new distance education diploma that's quite exciting. You can read more about it if you want at worlduni.com. We've had a tremendous response to it, which is wonderful. It's very practical. It covers ways of improving the world as well as yourself, as well as your work. It enables people to get training in setting up NGOs, as well as running businesses, as well as running government departments and ministries. It's something that we're able to spread throughout the whole of Africa. We have people doing it in Sudan, which is a war zone, so I'm glad that I can train them without having to go there. I think we already have someone from Burundi who's doing it, and that again is a pretty unsafe place to be. So it's really good we're reaching out to a lot of people with that. So I was training them till 1 a.m. Then they left and I kept on working, trying to do some summaries to provide to them and to provide to the large number of people who are coming to the office wanting additional summaries. I worked till about 4 a.m. Normally in Uganda I'd be able to drive home, or in fact lately I've been staying at the institute there to save money, but in Rwanda that's not the case, and we couldn't catch a taxi, and it's unsafe to hitch a ride because they might hit you over the head and kill you to steal your computer and money. So I ended up actually resting in the back of a bus that happened to be parked nearby. When it came to sunrise, I'm normally a pretty tough and obstinate bargainer to get the very best price, but I think Pastor Romani is even tougher than me. The bus driver was asking for $8 and he was saying, no, $7 is the, this is Australian, you can halve that in US dollars. He was saying, no, $7 is the highest we'll go to. And so the bus driver turfed us out and drove off in a huff and a puff. So we then moved into a derelict car, and I'm sitting in the middle, and very kindly the person on my left is taking the wet seat because the car was leaking, and we stayed there for about 30 minutes until we actually got another taxi that could give us a lift back home. He actually couldn't go home. He's doing a service this morning for some pygmies, and then he's joining me for the meeting at the gender ministry at 10 o'clock. So yeah, that's been the morning, and so an interesting day. And things definitely are quite hectic, but also really, really wonderful. We're doing training for the largest company here, the leading company. When I come again in February, I met a beautiful guy, Charles Murugandu, the head of the government party here. He was the vice chancellor of the largest university. He has taught at Harvard, and yet he's keen to do one-on-one work with me, which is a real compliment, and also wanting us to train his staff. We have a number of other groups here that are wanting training. I recently came here from Uganda, did a 12-day training of trainers for a number of charities and some businesses and some individuals and some government people. We did the last training for our diploma program there, the on-site program that has been running 5 days a week for the last 9 months. We have a lot of people from the president's office who just completed that program. And we had a 2-day financial literacy program, and was developing this distance education diploma there. The Ugandan office is just extraordinary. We've expanded, and it's now this huge office that took me a couple of days to get around there. 14 rooms, counselling rooms, computer rooms, library, training rooms, offices. There's about 6 of our volunteers living on site in some buildings out to the side. A year and a half ago, these people had never used computers, and I would ask them to buy a light bulb, and they'd look at me like, what is a light bulb? And now they've written manuals on using computers, which I assumed were professional manuals. Just great work. They're organizing all of the manuals for the courses and the advertising and the publicity, and I just turn up to radio interviews and... couple of days before I arrived, there was a full-page newspaper article all about the training that we're doing and interviewing the people, and they're really doing some just extraordinary things. And these are mainly volunteers. 16 out of 18 of the staff are volunteers. I think it's increased, maybe it's 19 or 20 now. It increases every couple of weeks or so. One of the ladies doing the training who teaches computers, she's just joined us and should be a great asset. And so, yeah, we now have an office in Uganda as well as Rwanda. We have... I think we've now got 3 people in Rwanda. This lady who joined us tonight, she's the project manager for the German embassy, doing a lot of work here, and she seems really keen on our work, and my impression is that she'll be working part-time, so 2 full-time people and 1 part-time person here, but it seems to be growing rapidly. And so yeah, that's just a bit of a snapshot about life here, about the sort of things that are happening. I really, if you do know anyone, or if you can help financially, providing computers, providing training, if you have the capacity to actually come over here for free and to pay your own way, if there's anything you can do to help, we really, really genuinely would massively improve it. It does look like our program is the only program that works at a level that changes people. The Reconciliation Commission are running training programs for about 300 people at a time, and for a month at a time, and they're providing accommodation and food, and it's compulsory for many senior people to do the program, as well as any of the rebels that come in. They actually end up doing the program, and so they have everything set up, and they're able to provide these at very cheap prices, but they don't have the technology of training that will change people. They're doing discussion groups day after day after day, and that's better than lectures, but it's not really maximizing the opportunity. And the people from the Reconciliation Commission that have seen our program are just really keen for us to be able to do it. So if you can help in any way, have a look at peace and peaceandprosperity.org. That's one word, peaceandprosperity.org. Email me, tony@peaceandprosperity.org, or give me a phone call. The contact details are there, +61 2 9 6 8 8 7 2 2 in Sydney. Love to hear from you. And I really hope that everything is well with you in Australia. And I'm looking forward to coming back in a few days. All the best till then. Bye.